Well, if you love good golf list, we ever have the right show for you today on the newest episode of Musings on Golf. I'm Kelly Elbin, and along with my partner, my A-lister, Bob Bupka, we'll be joined by a fantastic writer and storyteller, a gentleman by the name of Michael Arkish, whose new book, The Golf 100, A Spirited Ranking of the Greatest Players of All Time, is an absolute must read. And we'll also chat a bit about Justin Thomas finally getting back in the winner's circle in dramatic style at Hilton Head. Bob, you've known Michael Arkish for quite some time. He has long been a big winner. He's co-written 16 books. And Bob, did he ever put in the research on this new book, The Golf 100?
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. When you get a great golf writer, and you give him a great subject, you come up with Michael did, and he is to be congratulated. Absolutely fantastic piece of work.
Yeah, you and I talked with him last week, and this is a very comprehensive book on a lot of fronts. It includes the greatest male and female players. Each of the profiles, Bob, of the 100 that he selected, pretty extensive profiles on those individuals. And you're going to find out what method he went about determining, the top 100. There were a couple of names that didn't make it based on his criteria. Bob, this is a guy, he's co-written bestsellers with Scottie Pippen, Phil Jackson, Sugar Ray Leonard. He wrote a lovely book a number of years ago called I Remember Payne Stewart. This is a great writer here in Arkish. And I thought, like with any great writer, he's a great storyteller, Robert.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I think one of the best all time.
Yeah, I agree. You're going to enjoy that. When we come back from the interview, we'll talk about Justin Thomas and the help he got from one of the other top players in the world. We're going to pay tribute to Jay Sigel, arguably one of the top two amateurs, along with, in my opinion, Vinny Giles, since Bob Jones' heyday back in the 20s. We lost Jay last week to pancreatic cancer and a couple of other items. But let's hear this interview first with Michael Arkish. The book is The Golf 100. You're going to hear that right after you hear from our buddies, our friends, our corporate partners at William & Harry and Titleist. Our friends at William & Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William & Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee, more control with your irons, more spin with your wedges, and more opportunity to shoot your lowest scores.
Bob, just who is the greatest golfer of all time, and who might be in your top 100? Well, our guest today took the extensive time and effort to determine his list of the best 100 golfers ever, and the result is a terrific new book entitled The Golf 100, A Spirited Ranking of the Greatest Players of All Time. It's published by Doubleday, and it is an absolutely fantastic read. Michael Arkish, first of all, welcome to Musings on Golf and congratulations on putting together such a wonderful collection of stories about 100 people who have greatly helped shape our game.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an absolute blast to work on this book.
Michael, good to hear your voice. Bob Bupka here.
Hey, Bob.
How you been, buddy?
I'm good, yourself?
Congratulations. What a book. What a book. I mean, I
Thank
can't
you.
believe the work that you had to put into this.
I didn't have a life, Bob.
That's because you're in the golf media business.
Good point.
Hey, Michael, why did you decide to go down the road and write this book? You knew what you were getting into, right?
I thought I knew if I only I had known. You know what? I followed these guys growing up, and then when I got to Golf World magazine, I covered a bunch of them, and I was always curious to see where they all ranked in the pantheon of golf. And as I got older, I don't know if you feel the same way. I wanted to kind of check back in with them to see where they are. How do they look at their lives and careers now that they're in their 70s and 80s? Do they see their setbacks any differently? Do they regret anything? You know, and I found many of them sort of, yeah, they're still disappointed about certain outcomes, but more than anything else, they feel grateful for the career they had. And so they don't focus on those losses. It was fascinating to learn.
Hey, Michael, was there any type of formula that you used to determine the top 100?
Absolutely. I couldn't just say, hey, I'm a golf writer. Just listen to me, whatever I have to say. You know, I had to back it up somehow. So I looked at the numbers. I basically prioritized major championships. I mean, I have no disrespect to regular tour events, but let's face it, no one's sitting around on a Monday morning talking about what happened at the John Deere Classic, okay? We're talking about the Masters. We're talking about the four majors. So I placed a number, 2,000 points for every major title. 500 for second, 250 for third, 100 fourth, and 55th. I also did give 300 points for every PGA Tour victory. And I counted the US Amateur and British Amateur, which for the longest time were considered major championships. I feel like part of my mission here was to restore the glamour of the amateur championships.
Michael, also, and this is obviously important to you and to the book, this is both the greatest men and women of all time. So that mixing them in, I would imagine presented its own set of challenges.
Oh, absolutely. I did initially think of a separate list for women, but I feel that women have been marginalized enough already, and I feel they form some of the greatest players of the game. So I decided to just compare their totals to each other, not to the men's totals. As to where to put them in the list, that was probably the hardest thing to do. I guess I came down to just sort of using my expertise as a longtime golf writer to decide where Annika belonged, where Patty Berg belonged, and so on. But it was still very challenging. You're right.
How long did it take you, Michael, to write this?
From the time I came up with the idea until my editor said you can no longer make any changes was probably close to 2.5 to two, a little more than 2.5 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's dedication.
Well, you know what? I finished three or four chapters and I think, oh, wow, I'm doing so great here. And then I thought, wait a minute, I got 96 to go.
I know the feeling.
Because each profile is pretty detailed. I mean, this is not just a few paragraphs. And you that was that had to be your plan going in, to tell as much of the story of each individual as possible.
Yeah, it was my plan, and it was difficult because I even felt, I mean, the longer chapters and maybe 2,500 words, I could have written two or three times as much of that. The book's close to 130,000 words. I could have easily gone over 200,000 words, but who's going to read over 200,000 words, right? So, yeah, I had a cut. I don't pretend to say they're the deepest portraits. I just tried to give people a sense of who these guys were. So many of them, we've heard their names, but we know little about them, and I wanted to breathe more life back into them.
Well, we're so pleased to be joined by the terrific golf writer, Michael Arkish, whose new book, The Golf 100, A Spirited Ranking of the Greatest Players of All Time, has just been released. So you just talked about people who maybe time forgot, not necessarily time forgot, but that people of this generation don't know a lot of from years gone by. And you're a terrific storyteller. I mean, just I'm 25 pages into the book. I wish I just got it a couple of days ago, so I wish I was farther. But I've read four of the profiles that you've written, so starting obviously at number 100. Michael, arguably the most fascinating and intriguing individual to me, at least, is the guy at 100. If you would talk about the life and really the incredible talent of Johnny McDermott.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. Two-time U.S. Open champion, 1911, 1912. To this day, still at the age of 19, the youngest Open champion ever. The first American-born champion. No, not Francis we met, as many would have assumed who saw the movie and read the book. He was incredible. He also sort of carried a real attitude, and that got him into trouble. He'd say some brash things and didn't rub that rub people the wrong way. He got into all sorts of trouble, though. It's really a sad story. Had losses in the stock market. He was on a ship that collided with a grain ship in the Atlantic. He at his cl the course where he worked in Atlantic City, he collapsed, and he wound up being committed to a psychiatric hospital where he spent much of his life. I have to tell the way this chapter ends because it's so moving. He's at Marion, 1971 U.S. Open. An assistant pro has no idea who he is ushering him out. He's the Johnny's older now, he's disheveled. And at that moment, as he's being escorted out of the clubhouse, who's there but Arnold Palmer? Palmer recognizes who he is, and he's Palmer's guest the rest of the week.
That's what Arnold did, right? Even at a younger age. I mean, Arnold recognized the great history of the game, right?
Absolutely.
Do you have any sense of how McDermott's game, and it's always hard to compare eras, and I get that. Might Johnny McDermott's game have stacked up to today with the equipment? Did he have all the skills, was he a good iron player, all the skills to be a contender at big events?
Yeah, and I actually think that goes. My general feeling is that you take any of these players and put them in another era, they would have played really well. Would they have been the exact same level of stardom from one era to another? Who knows? We can never predict that. But my mission also, I felt like I could only assess how they did against their competition in that era, not against anyone before or after. And Bobby Jones had put that really well. And so that doesn't mean somebody, a player on the list who's number 40 is going to beat player number 80 on the list, only that player racked up more points in the years that he or she played.
Then you have the story of Champagne Tony Lima, who obviously makes the list. Michael, Tony's upbringing, it was challenging at the start. He lost his dad at a young age, but he made so much of his career. Sounded like a terrific guy on top of it, and then just a tragic ending to his life for he and his wife. Could you talk a little bit about Tony?
Yeah, he had an early tough start in his career, and I think he was considered too much of a playboy, and it really set him back. And then he met his w future wife and sort of rediscovered himself, really, and was just he won the Open, the US, the British Open at St. Andrews in '64. He was really taking off, and at the age of 32, at 66, is when he got in the plane crash. He and his wife both passed away. Horrible story, just think about how many more tournaments he would have won.
You think about him and obviously Payne Stewart. I know you wrote a book about Payne and the unfortunate parallels of the two of them. Payne with the way he dressed, and he was so recognizable, right?
Oh, absolutely. Two very flashy characters. Just because you're a great golfer doesn't mean you're the most charismatic figure. And those two, whereas, you put Jimmy DeMarin on that list. The golf has been really treated to its share of charismatic figures, and Tony Lima definitely. Again, it's just wonder how many more tournaments, how many more majors he would have won if he had been able to survive, if he had not had that plane crash.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so let's look at the women on the list. Golf fans of today obviously know Annika. They're familiar with the incredible career that Kathy Whitworth had. But Mickie Wright, at number six on your list, is the highest ranked woman that you have. Why?
Oh, I don't think there's any question. I mean, I did it by numbers, first of all. 82 victories, 13 majors. She, as Ben Hogan and many others said, she possessed the greatest swing they'd ever seen, male or female. She re scaled back her game at the age of 34. She could have won 90, maybe 100 times. I remember talking to, I was so fortunate to be able to talk to Kathy Whitworth a number of occasions before she passed away, and she could not stop raving about Mickey Wright and how she was by far the best she'd ever seen.
Did she did it she was obviously a great all-around player. For
Oh.
someone like Kathy Whitworth to say that,
Yes.
Mickey Wright had all the tools, right?
Absolutely. And she there was an early part in her career where I don't think she respected the short game enough. Putting especially, she sort of felt like the real essence of the game is how far you hit it and how you hit your iron shots. But she learned pretty quickly that, you still got to score, you still got to make those putts. And oh yeah, and there was an event she played in many years later. I think she was in her 58 years old, and a lot of players on the tour, just LPGA tour, could not wait to see her and just watch her in action. They were so blown away by her talent.
Yeah, I think that's a cool thing, right? Is to be able to for a younger generation to still see play. I think Couples talks about playing golf or spending time with Gene Sarazen. It's one of the cool things, Michael, about our game is you have that link between the guys playing and then the guys you've heard about, and then you either get to meet them or play with them at that level. It's pretty cool.
I love that you brought that up because, I mean, you might have a baseball all-star game. Remember the time that Ted Williams came out in the wheelchair and the
At
players were
Fenway.
screaming? But that's a rare thing, really, where, a player 30 years later gets to. I mean, and they might see him at an event, but they don't play golf with them, and they don't see him on the course. That is a beauty of this game. You can link all the eras together because of that. Absolutely.
Hey, Michael, let me ask you about the victory just this past weekend. An incredible one by Rory McIlroy. Many thought he would win the Grand Slam many years ago, kept failure after failure, but never gave up and ultimately achieved the ultimate goal of completing the career Grand Slam. What a feat that was!
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny, in the book, I mean, I've been a huge Rory fan, okay? In the book, I talk about how disappointing he's been, okay? The fact that he hasn't gotten 10 years. I mean, who would have thought back in 2014 that he would go 11 years to the next? I can't tell you how much money I would have put on that one, that happening. So I felt, Pinehurst last year, I wondered, oh my gosh, is Pinehurst going to be to him what Olympic was to Palmer? Is he not going to be able to recover from this? And then as I'm watching them last week, I'm going, if he loses this after the lead he had on Sunday, that makes Pinehurst look like nothing compared. How's he going to recover from this? Thank God we don't have to find out.
And that's exactly right. We had Adam Szupak on the other day to recap the Masters, and he said as much that, look, he might have gone off as a monk somewhere and hidden away, and you never had heard from him again if he had lost. I mean, he, yeah, I don't know. I guess you could say maybe Justin Rose would have been the saddest Masters champion ever if it had flipped the script.
But I think actually the way it all worked out, that Rory sort of fumbled it away and regained it, is better for him than if he had actually gone on to win by 4 or 5, because it proves to him once again how he can be resilient and come back from adversity. So it all worked out perfectly, really.
You have Rory 25th on your list in this book. Safe to say, Michael, if you had written this book after this Masters, he'd probably be a couple of notches higher on that list.
I already went through and looked at the numbers. He would be number 20.
There you go.
So I'm planning on doing. So let's see. For now, I'm gonna after these this whole golf season, I'm planning to do a paperback revision. So
Nice.
we'll see what happens. But as of right now, he's 20. And look at Faxon, his coach. A lot of people say, okay, he's gonna go to double digits now. We'll see. That's not as easy as it sounds, right? But I think that the chances of him getting to 7 or 8 and going into that Watson Palmer player category, I think is very possible.
I'm wondering, anytime you do a list like this, whether it's two people, five people, 20 people, or in your case, 100 people, somebody's left off that list, and people say, "Wait a minute, why didn't that guy or that woman get on the list?" Was there somebody who's notable, recognizable, who didn't make your top 100?
Yeah, a couple people, and I did it by numbers, so I but I look back and I go, how can you leave this person off the list? Take Scottie Scheffler. I mean, the best player in the world the last few years. How can you not put him on the list? Well, the numbers didn't add up. Justin Thomas, the numbers didn't add up. They were very close. I watched the British Open last year. On that weekend, there was Adam Scott, Thomas, Rahm, Scheffler, I think Xander. All these people were, if anyone, I mean, Xander won the tournament, but the others, any one of them had won, they would have gone into the final list. And that would have really put a lot of work on me because my book was due in like a week later.
Right. Colin Montgomery as an example. He
Okay, you
look,
know.
had he won, if he, he was in a playoff for the 95 PGA Championship, he was in a playoff for a US Open. My guess is, Michael, if he had won just one major championship, he's on your list.
Probably, but I can't be certain. I mean, he had 142 starts in the United States, and he did not win. Not forget about a major; he didn't win once.
Yeah.
Kudos to him for everything he accomplished in Europe and his brilliance as a Ryder Cup player. But you have to win one of our majors to really qualify for great. I mean, not let me say that, but I have two players on the list who did not win majors but won a lot of tournaments in the United States: Harry Cooper and Donald Smith.
Yeah, and Mike, how did you factor in the Ryder Cup play? Because Ryder Cup today is such a big deal. What'd you do?
I didn't do anything because there was no Ryder Cup before 1927. So therefore, I'm kind of prejudiced against all the players before then. They wouldn't get any points for that. But I felt like I was a juror who, even though I didn't kind of allocate official points, I couldn't let it help affect my thinking.
Did you ever reach out if you were close to some? Did you ever reach out to a third party and say, "Hey, I'm kind of here's where I am with this guy and this guy. What do you think?" Or was it always your judgment at the end?
It was always my judgment at the end, but I had a conversation with a friend a couple of times because there was one point where I seriously considered that the GOAT might not be Jack or Tiger. The GOAT might be Bobby Jones. I have enormous respect for him, and I think we forget about Bobby Jones sometimes. The fact that he won 13 majors in his last 21 starts, Grand Slam at the age of 28, retires in 1930, and the influence on the game is so profound.
Yeah, and we saw it just as recently as Rory winning on Sunday at Augusta National that that Mr. Jones built. Okay, so who's number one? Why, again, it's based on numbers, so I think I know who's number one and why, and then who follows two and three.
Okay, number three is Jones, who edged out Hogan, and I have all the respect for Hogan, Ben Hogan, but again, Jones's numbers and the bonus points a game for his contribution and impact on the game. Number two is Tiger. Now, look at Tiger was on the path to being the greatest player of all time. He should be the greatest player of all time. He wins
Yeah,
that
I agree.
Open at Torrey Pines in 2008 at the age of 32, 14th major. We wrote all the stories back then. It wasn't if he's going to break Jack's record, it's when. 2012, 13, 14, it was presumed. He didn't do it. We know the story with the injuries. We know the story about the scandal. Can't get around that. Jack has 20 majors, not 18. I'm giving him the two Masters he won. They were part of his total for the longest time. Somebody took him away. I don't know who it was. 19 seconds, 9/3. The numbers are better.
So, okay, so you give Jack 20. You have to also give Tiger what he win, three amateurs?
He won three amateurs, but they don't. I decided not to count amateurs as full 2,000 points after 61, after Jack wins at Pebble, because Jack was the last highly touted amateur who had a chance to make it big, who thought about staying as an amateur. The amateur has changed since then. It's not what it used to be. And so I gave Tiger 1,000 points for each of his amateur victories.
Well, you know
Got
what
it.
we got to do, Michael? You got to get busy on writing the next top 100. So I want to say on my behalf, it has been an honor. It's been a privilege. You've been a longtime friend, and you're very, very talented. And I appreciate you spending some time here on Musings on Golf.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Well, we're not going to let you go quite yet because I've got a couple of questions before we're going to let Michael Arkish off the hook. We've talked strictly golf, but Michael, you wrote three, co-wrote three bestsellers with Scottie Pippen, with Scottie Pippen, with Coach Jackson, and with Sugar Ray Leonard. There's got to be a common thread there in terms of passion for excellence. that runs through, and certainly with your book on the Golf 100, it's all about greatness. Is there some correlation, some similarities with those three great in their sports?
Absolutely. The word, when you ask that question, the word that comes to my mind is sacrifice. We look at all the rewards, we look at everything they accomplish. It is unbelievable on a daily basis what each of them had to sacrifice in their lives, in their all their careers, their families, whatever, to get to that level of excellence. It just doesn't happen. You can be skilled, but you have to work on it over and over and over. Each one of them displayed that.
There a difference when it comes to an individual sport like golf, and in Sugar Ray's case, like boxing, in terms of that drive and that sacrifice, than there is in a team-related sport like basketball?
Oh, absolutely. I think that the individual is much tougher because in team sports, you can always blame other circumstances. The guy didn't get me the ball in the right place. The coach didn't put me in the right position. In golf, in boxing, it's just you. You cannot, that's why I love individual sports. You cannot hide. You're exposed. If Rory loses that Masters, he has no one to blame but himself. So I love that pressure and to see people respond to that pressure.
Well, final ones from me. Back to the Golf 100, a spirited ranking of the greatest players of all time. You did so much research. Was there somebody that ended up higher, maybe on your list than you might have expected? As you went through, and somebody, whoa, I didn't realize he or she was would get to this level in terms of my thoughts.
Yeah, all sorts of people. Willie Anderson, four-time U.S. Open champion. Everyone knows about Hogan and Nicklaus but they don't know that Willie Anderson won four U.S. Opens. Okay, in the 1900s, Leo Deagle, a top player in the 20s and 30s, Harold Hilton, a great amateur player. There were all sorts of players who I knew their names, but when I dove in and looked at their accomplishments, it was even more incredible than I had imagined.
You had of the modern players, in addition to Tiger, you've got Phil at 13, and I'm looking here, and then you had obviously Rory at 25. Talk a little bit about Mickelson and his career. It's been you it's been a remarkable run, right?
Yeah, but he's one of a number of players who, I have to say, I feel underachieved. I mean, he's got the six majors, but he should have eight or nine. We all know about Wingfoot in 2006. He
True.
was he too aggressive, and that, again, that's not taking anything away from his great. Also, the fact that he did not win an Open is something that takes something away from his greatness. Yeah, I feel so many though. So many players are in this, like Davis Love, Sergio, Ernie Els. Great Hall of Fame type careers, but they didn't accomplish as much as we thought. Gene Littler is another. Crenshaw, you could say.
I agree with you on the. I agree with you on Phil for sure. I agree with you also. To me, and this is nothing against him personally, but Davis Love the third to me, with the golf swing that he had,
Yes.
and
Yes.
the lineage with his dad being a teacher. I mean,
Yes.
he was born to be a golfer. In other words, man, with the exception of winning the one PGA Championship at Wingfoot, he Michael Arkish, he should have won in my opinion, multiple major championships.
Absolutely. And you go back to like the late 80s when you think of Freddie Couples and Davis Love, good friends. What the overnight, I mean, they only won two combined majors. That's incredible. I would have put that 5 to 10 really at their talent levels.
Is there an intangible there as it relates to two of them? I'm not talking personally, but in terms of drive, that maybe was the reason that they didn't win more than two.
Well, I mean, I talked to one person told me that, they didn't think that Davis had that same sort of killer mentality that other players have had. Fred, had the back issues. We don't know how that factored in. If his back is healthy, he first injured it in 94, 2 years after he wins Augusta, who knows what he would have been able to accomplish. So injuries play a role, but I do think you're right. Going back to the sacrifice we talked about with other athletes, it's got to Golf can't, it's got to mean so much to you to be able to achieve at that level.
And that's clearly why, for so many, Tiger has been the superstar he is, because of that enormous drive, right? and that killer instinct and everything that's gone into him. And it really is a shame. I'm kind of with you. If all the self-induced issues that he dealt with, quite honestly, hadn't happened, oh, I think he certainly would have passed Jack all time in major champ. I don't think there's any question.
I agree. I actually wrote in the book, I was at the 1996 Quad City tournament when Ed Fiore beat him. And that was the first time I saw Tiger in person. He was 20 years old. And I kind of, in the book I write, I wish I could go back in time and have given him a crystal ball and showed him everything that's going to happen then. And just so he would know what trials and were awaiting him. Don't mess it up because you have the chance to be the greatest of all time.
Well, this book is absolutely fantastic, The Golf 100. And as we close, Michael Arcus, I like to ask this final question of our guests, and we've had a really sweet and cool array of responses. And that is, if you could play with three other individuals for sort of a magical round, whether they're still with us or they're deceased, who would those three be to round out your magic group, and where would you play?
Can I give you two groups?
Please.
Two. One is Jack, Tiger, and Bobby Jones at Augusta National. Okay. Number two is Mickey Wright, Joyce Weathered, and Babe at St. Andrews.
That's fabulous. In closing, then, talk a little bit, please, about Babe Didrikson-Zaharias, and obviously an Olympic star and also an incredible golfer.
Yeah, I will say that I think she was the greatest athlete of the 20th century, male or female, more than Michael Jordan. I said that in Chicago, by the way, and I was like, what am I doing here, right? Michael Jordan,
More,
Magic,
wait, more than Jim Thorpe?
more than Jim Thorpe, more, yeah, absolutely, what she was able to attain, all the different levels, no question about it. And to win the U.S. Women's Open after her cancer surgery by 12 strokes, phenomenal.
The Golf 100, a spirited ranking of the greatest players of all time. It's out. Michael Arkish has been our guest. Michael, where can I get this? Bookstores, I'm presuming, Amazon, etc.
Yeah, bookstores, Amazon, and also the Penguin Random House website. I encourage people to buy it. I encourage people to start their own arguments with their friends.
I know, and that's the fun part. I love the word spirited in here, right? Because it creates a spirited debate, right?
Absolutely. Enjoy it. Have fun and just remember that golf is a game, but we love it and we treasure the past and we're so grateful for all the players who paved the way for the ones who are out there today.
Well, and you're right. And in closing, look at how the past and the present connected with Rory spending a week, spending lunch with Jack and going through how he would play Augusta National the week before the Masters. And how did that turn out, right?
Absolutely. It's fantastic to be able to have that connection.
Michael Arcus, thank you so much for joining Bob and me on Musings on Golf. It's been terrific.
Thank you so much.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William and Harry, and you should too. Folks, I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William and Harry. Bob, I said going in that Michael Arkish is a terrific storyteller, and I know our listeners really enjoyed what he had to say. He made that determination, Bob, that the success in major golf championships was the number one criteria, and it's, in my opinion, it's kind of hard to argue with that. If you're going to be ranked the best, well, it's how you do in the very best of events.
Very well said there, Mr. Elbin. And that's exactly what Michael did. And he is to be congratulated. This is just a fantastic book.
Yeah, and I encourage everyone to visit their local bookstore, to go online through Amazon. It's published, as I said, through Doubleday, and I just love the green color of the book. It's an eye catcher, and it's a terrific read. Talk about catching the eye. Talk about dramatic stuff, Bob. It's good to see that Justin Thomas, it had been, oh heck, almost 3 years since he'd won a golf tournament, Bob. took him into overtime on Sunday at Hilton Head. Got it done, didn't he?
Absolutely incredible. Long overdue. I mean, he's way too talented to go this long a drought without a victory. He is just absolutely fantastic. And I'm glad he finally got that next victory, got that monkey off his back.
Yeah, me too. You know, Justin's talked a lot about the need for himself and his fellow tour players to be more engaging with fans. And so I think he's headed down the right path at a time when golf is divided, and you need to have as much of that interpersonal relationship with fans as possible. So his win, I think, is very well received. The putt in on the in sudden death, you know, he later on surprisingly said that Xander Schauffele had a lot to do with his sort of resurgence as a really good putter. He said he had just sort of kind of lost his way. He reached out to Xander Schauffele. Think about that, Bob. How many sports, by the way, do the guys who are competing against one another reach out to their opponents, if you will, and say, "Hey, can I pick your brain for a few hours?" Which he did with Xander. And among the other things that I thought was really interesting about what came out of what he heard from Xander is he realized this. He said, and I think we can all relate to this, Bob. He said he felt like he'd become too mechanical and too robotic. And he said, I call it, quote, pro-am putting when it's like I obviously want to make a putt that I'm hitting in a pro-am, but I'm not grinding on the reed and thinking about all these different things. I'm pretty much stepping up, giving it a look, and go. And how often I make putts doing that. Bob, that to me is as much the mental approach. Bob, clear the mind as much as you can. Get over the ball, just like he did on that lengthy putt in the playoff, and go ahead and hit it.
Very good way of looking at it. And Justin Thomas is his pedigree, pedigree, pedigree. I mean, just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, and you're right. His father, Mike, a longtime PGA of America professional, has really been Justin's teacher since he was just a kid. And we had Mike on, gosh, in a year or two, on Musings on Golf, and just a terrific guy. And you could see where that pedigree you mentioned comes from. So it gives him a big boost going into Quail Hollow, where he won the PGA Championship in 2017. That's where the PGA Championship will be played next month. But let's get back to what and hear from Justin in terms of the familiarity with the golf course last week and how much that helped him get over the finish line.
This is a golf course and a place that I love. I mean, I'm fortunate to play a junior heritage, a junior tournament here. So it's just I feel like it's a golf course that fits my game, or it's a place that I just really enjoy to play, because I think it's a place that rewards good golf, but it can really, really penalize you, and you can make bogeys so fast if you get out of position. And I was really proud of today, of just staying patient and kind of plotting our way along. And yeah, I mean, I feel like winning on a golf course like this is a pretty cool thing to add to your resume. And not that I wouldn't have taken one wherever I could get it, and still will, but yeah, it's a great feeling.
It is a great feeling, Bob. He's been trending in the right direction. This wasn't just like it happened out of the blue. He has been playing better and putting better, but it's night and day difference when you actually win the golf tournament, Robert.
Yeah, good point there, Kelly Elbin. You can play very well and not win. You could play lousy and win. Sometimes you get lucky and win when you don't deserve it. But in this case, he certainly has deserved that victory.
Few things before we close. Last year, for the first time in 28 years, there was a new golf course at Pinehurst. Pinehurst number 10, Tom Doak designed it. It ended up being Golf Digest's best new public course in 2024. And lo and behold, Pinehurst number 11 will break ground later this year. Bill Kaur and Ben Crenshaw design. Bob Kaur and Crenshaw had a lot to do with restoring the bunkering and the wire grass around the perimeter of the golf course on Pinehurst number 2. And we saw how challenging that was for the US Open last year. But Bob, between those two, I mean, just great, great architects. They've fed off each other so well through the years. And now the 11th course at the fabled Pinehurst Resort.
Incredible work by Crenshaw and Kaur. I mean, they're two geniuses, and they have created another masterpiece, and I wouldn't expect anything less.
Yeah, agreed. Thumbs up to PGA of America professional Ben Polland. Ben Polland won the National PGA Professional Championship last year, played in the PGA Championship, and as part of that, he was able to play at a number of PGA Tour events this year. Here where I live in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, he made a great putt on the 36th hole at the Cognizant Classic in the Palm Beaches to make the cut a few weeks ago. He made the cut last week at the PGA Tour event in Puerto Rico. And starting Sunday at PGA Golf Club in Port St. Lucie, Florida, he defends that PGA Professional Championship title with the low 20 from that 4-day championship, advancing to join Justin Thomas and other great ones at the PGA Championship at Quail Hollow in May. Bob, we really would be remiss if we don't talk for a minute about Jay Sigel. Passed away April 19th from pancreatic cancer at age 81. And as I said early on, if you look at golf history and you look at what Bob Jones did as an amateur golfer, he's untouched, he's unparalleled. But with so many guys having turned professional, in the years that followed, it really to me came down to Jay Sigel and Vinny Giles as the two great amateurs of our time, if you will. Jay Sigel won two U.S. amateurs. He won three U.S. mid-amateurs. Then when you get to the Walker Cup, the amateur equivalent of the Ryder Cup, record 9 Walker Cup appearances for the U.S., record 18 Walker Cup victories overall. No one won more than him. But then Jay Sigel, Bob, did something unusual. He made the determination at age 50, you know what? Start making a little bit of money on this. He had a hand injury in college that prevented him from turning professional, had a very successful career in insurance. But at that 50 mark, he said, let's do it. And son of a gun, Bob, he went out. He won 8 times on PGA Tour Champions as a professional. Great player, highly, highly respected individual. Very, very sorry to hear about the passing of the legendary Jay Sigel last week.
Yeah, one of the true really greats, not only as a golfer. I knew Jay pretty well, and he was an outstanding gentleman and a real tribute to the sport. Congratulations on a wonderful career there, Mr. Siegel. You were one of the best.
He will be missed very, very much. And condolences to his family from he our friends or their friends here at Musings on Golf. Bob, next week, Justin Thomas knows all too well about the American Junior Golf Association. Really, that's where he got started on the national scene. And Stephen Hamblin, the longtime CEO of the AJGA, will be our guest. Looking forward to chatting with Mr. Hamblin about what's going on today, what's happened in the past, and where the AJGA is headed for the future. Again, for my number one listed guy, Bob Bupka, Helly Elbin signing off. Thanks for joining us on Musings on Golf.